I love farmers. I love every farmer I've ever met. They're so creative and innovative. And my favorite thing prior to even being at Rodale was to be invited to farmer meetings and drink chocolate milk and eat organic cheese with them and, you know, talk about how their season's going, what's going well, what new things they're trying out. I will say every farmer I've met, they know their land better than any consultant is ever going to know. And every farmer, you know, is so innovative and they come up with the craziest crop rotation plans that work.
It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
We understand why people want to farm. We've heard a lot about that. But that's not enough for some. I mean, they may be farming already, but they want to transition and become organic farmers. Why is that? Well, I have the right person to ask that question today. I'm happy to welcome Emily Newman, who is with Rodale. Emily, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Thanks, Roger.
Got a lot of questions for you. Let me start with why is it that people are, maybe they're currently farming and they've got some land. What's the reasons that you run into when people say that they want to become organic farmers? Why do they want to become organic farmers?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we actually get motivations from all different angles for them to reach out to us. And not only just farmers, but landowners as well that have tenant farmers, and also people who don't have any land but are interested in farming in the future. So farmers that are currently conventionally farming, a lot of the motivations we hear are twofold. It's pretty much split 50-50 when we get a phone call. The first one is that commodity crop prices are really, really low right now, and they can't make a living on the current system that they have, and they don't want to get big. And they don't want to have to get out. They want to be able to continue farming on a reasonable scale, but also be producing a crop that gets them enough income to live properly. And so a lot of motivations really does come down to that dollar amount. When we compare side by side a conventional crop versus an organic crop. So taking in consideration Pennsylvania, I sit here in Pennsylvania, and most commodity prices for corn were around $3 to $4. Now, when we look at organic corn, it's between $9 and $10 for contracts. So that's roughly 2 to 3 times the amount of money that they're able to get. And even if they're taking some sort of small hit on yield, they're still able to make up that income. And so on a per acre basis and on a large scale basis, it's just makes sense for them. But sometimes that's not their motivation either, which is really, really cool to hear, is that we get calls from farmers that, you know, maybe there's a family member that is sick and they're attributing it to the fact that they've been spraying chemicals on their land, you know, outside their back door where their children grew up, where their children are running around. And they don't want to continue doing that anymore. They want to find an alternative method. And honestly, it's so encouraging to hear that farmers are understanding that there's other ways to do it that's equitable for them, but also healthy for them. We've gotten a lot of interest too recently from landowners just giving us a call and saying, you know, I've had this land in my family for many years. I maybe, you know, live on the farm, or some people live hundreds of miles away from the land that they own, and it's just being farmed conventionally, but they're hearing more about soil health, about cover crops, about implementing crop rotations and integrating livestock. And they want to know, how is that possible for it to occur on their operation as well. And that's really neat to see that there's this movement of people taking responsibility for what's happening on the land and trying to move it in a direction that meets their goals for their operation, both economically and environmentally. So it's really cool to work with a broad range of farmers that are conventional, but then also landowners that aren't actually doing the farming themselves.
You know, it's interesting because when you describe that, I understand that the first one is economic, and if they can make more money, which we should pause there for a minute, because one of the issues in the past has been that even though organic often got a premium, there was a sacrifice in yields. And so you needed a premium to be able to equal. And I understand some of the work being done at Rodale has been narrowing that gap down so that what normally or used to be expected, that because it was organic, you were going to have a lower yield. So it wasn't enough to get a higher price. But that's changing, isn't it? The yields are catching up and getting more on a par with the conventional. Is that true?
I think that's a broad misconception that is thrown around in the conventional agriculture world, which is that organic agriculture can't feed the world because of such a severe yield dip. And what our research is showing at Rodale, and it's being backed by research at Penn State and University of Iowa, is that there is an initial yield drop. The soil, after years and years of chemical applications, of back-to-back monocultures, that the soil hasn't quite adapted to that organic system yet. But after about 5 years, we see that yields are competitive in organic systems and conventional systems. And one thing that's also interesting that's come out of our research is that in years of drought, organic actually can outcompete conventional agriculture systems. And, you know, as we enter in a world where climate change makes water availability sometimes sketchy at times, you know, that's something that's really important, is understanding how organic can be resilient during these times.
Well, you know, I want to get back then on the other reason that you were saying. Some people are making the change because they're motivated, from what I hear you say, health concerns, maybe their own family. And that they apparently are saying that it can't be a good thing. And maybe they have some evidence that there's been health issues in their family or their neighborhood, and they want to just reduce the amount of chemicals they're using. But then you kind of alluded to this third area when the landlords and others are interested from an environmental standpoint and from climate change. And are you finding that you're having to help them see that picture more and more? I mean, because the effects of people responding to pesticides and so forth, that's been around for a while. The understanding about economics have been around for a while. But relatively recently, at least in popular conversation, it's been more in the last few years of climate change. So when you're getting a call from a landlord or from some others, do you find that's coming up in those conversations now?
It's interesting. So my background a little bit is that I studied soil science in college. And when I entered into the realm of soil science, I really knew nothing about soil science. And everything people were saying was, farmers, they don't know anything about soil. You know, your average consumer, they know nothing about soil. But these days, soil seems to be weaved into the conversations that everybody's having. You know, you see Netflix documentaries about soil health and tillage effects on the soil and climate change. And it's really, people are starting to understand what that looks like and how monoculture agriculture and chemical agriculture can have an impact on the environment. And so honestly, a lot of conversations I have are not convincing people that organic agriculture is the way to go. People are calling me because they want to know, okay, organic agriculture is the way to go. How do I make that happen on my land?
Well, one of the things that's kind of related to that right now is that people are just discovering the microbiome, or at least, again, popular conversations. And so the microbiome, which is all this microbial life in the soil that we just keep learning more and more about. I find like every day I'm Googling something else, trying to figure it out. And it's sort of hard to explain, but you've got all that life in the soil that the role it plays is affected apparently by the various chemicals. It makes some sense that you're into the soil. And so you've got to now kind of reach down into the soil. It's a good thing you had some of that background and inclination, because to be able to help them understand that you're having an impact on the microbes that are essential to be able to feed these plants and help them get the nutrients they want, whether it's the fungi or the bacteria in the soil. Doesn't that feel like a frontier at this stage?
It really does. And it's so amazing to see some of the research that is going to be coming out in the future about this. And one thing I was actually reading before I jumped on here was that there is this, you know, antioxidant called ergothionine. And in some of our farming systems trials that we're conducting at Rodeo, which conduct side-by-side trials of conventional and organic agriculture, we also now have no-till and tillage plots. And what we're seeing is that there's higher level of these antioxidants in soils that aren't tilled. And I find that to be fascinating because it's a direct link to how tillage impacts the fungal community, which is allowing for these antioxidants to thrive. And so not only on just the frontier of how it is impacting the crop health, but it's also now we're being able to link it to human health as well and what's actually in the end products. And I think that as we move forward with science, not only at Rodeo, but at all these amazing universities that are conducting these research trials, we're going to find out so many things that, you know, we wish we would have known many, many years ago.
Well, it is exciting. Each time, though, we hit another level of this frontier, we start introducing some other language about it too. I mean, you've been doing organic at Rodeo for what, 40 years or something like that?
Yeah, 40 years.
And it's remarkable what you've done. You've had an incredible history and so much progress that's taken place there. But in the course of that time, probably what, 10 years ago or so, we started talking about sustainability. Mm-hmm. And that's good. But then there's been many people, probably some from your organization as well, that said sustainable suggests it's just like enough to get by. I mean, it's economics, it's trying to keep everything afloat, because sustainable seems like, again, it's just enough to sustain, just to get by. And then we started putting in a new term, and regenerative. And I'm wondering, in your programs, how do you deal with regenerative? How do you explain how regenerative belongs as a what, an adjective or an adverb or something to your normal organic programs?
Yeah, so that is a loaded question. And I think if we kind of take a step back and think about, you know, agriculture as a spectrum. So, you know, we talk about, I've thrown around a couple different terms here. I said conventional agriculture, and I said organic agriculture, and now we're talking about regenerative agriculture. And when I talk about those things, you know, when I say those words, what I am truly trying to represent is a system that is in place that represents what that's trying to say. But there's lots of misconceptions out there right now about what that actually says and what that actually means. And so when I talk about conventional agriculture, I'm talking about general systems. Maybe it's a grain crop rotation that is utilizing GMOs. They're utilizing herbicides to control weeds, and they're utilizing pesticides to control any insects and fungicides to control disease. So when I'm talking about the conventional system, I'm just talking about that they're using those tools. Those are the tools that are in their toolbox to make the system work. Now, when I talk about organic, what I'm actually talking about is the National Organic Program at 7 CFR 205. thrive. So I'm talking about a federal program that has a set of rules and regulations that all farmers under that program are required to follow to put that USDA seal organic on their on their products, and also to talk about how their products are organic. Now, regenerative is a little tricky in that sense, is that regenerative isn't a federally regulated term the way that organic is federally regulated. And so, you know, a farmer in the Midwest could potentially say, I'm regenerative because I am utilizing diverse cover crops in between my cash grain rotation, and I'm integrating livestock to graze my fallow land or graze down my cover crops. But what they also may be doing is spraying herbicide to be able to terminate their cover crops and plant their cash crop later, or they might be using pesticides to control any pests that are arising in their cash crop during the season. With organic farmers, they're not. They are only using what is allowed under the National Organic Program, which is synthetic products that are approved under the National Organic Program, and there's only very, very few, and then also natural inputs that haven't been proved to be harmful to the environment. So mainly manure and compost. So now we have this kind of dichotomy, is that we have farmers that say, you know, I don't want to be organic because organic is a federal program, but I want to be regenerative. And what we always try to tell them is that, you know, organic is really this baseline to soil health. It's really this opportunity to put everybody on a level playing field that's implementing these great practices and is reducing the amount of tools in their toolbox to be able to control pests, weeds, and diseases. So what's actually come out of that then is the Regenerative Organic Alliance. So when I say regenerative, I tend to have to say with organic. So regenerative organic, not just regenerative and not just organic. And that's because Regenerative Organic Alliance is a program that is offering certifications to already certified organic operations that are going above and beyond organic standards in regards to soil health, animal welfare, and human and social fairness aspects to their operation.
Now, I got to throw one more word that can get a little more confusing. Every once in a while, we put the word real in there, too. So there's like real organic, and I've heard even like real regenerative, too. Why is it that real is used to describe these systems sometimes?
Honestly, I think it comes back to a little bit of a historical sense that the National Organic Program has allowed hydroponics and aquaponics in organic systems. And to a lot of farmers, they see that as not organic because it's a soilless system. You know, they are actively building soil organic matter and sequestering carbon. And what they don't want to see is great farmland being paved over and greenhouses being built to grow vegetables in a soilless system. So a lot of these organic farmers who have been continuously improving soil for many years under this organic system have been frustrated with the lack of policy change to prevent aquaponic and hydroponic products from becoming certified organic. So in response, there's been a lot of changing of adjectives to describe what they're actually doing. And so, you know, with the real organic and with regenerative organic, both those systems are prohibited. Aquaponics and hydroponics are prohibited under both those systems. And so, you know, they're trying to say, you know, ours goes above and beyond. We're actually, you know, building soil organic matter. We're continuously improving the health of our soil.
Well, I think it's time for us to go back and explain Rodale. I mentioned that you've been around a long time, about four decades or so. But what's your elevator speech for Rodale? Why it exists and what it does.
Sure. Yeah. So Rodale Institute is located in Kutztown, Pennsylvania, which is kind of the southeastern side of Pennsylvania. We are a research and education institute, and we actually sit on 333 acres of certified organic land. So One of our flagship programs that we've been running is the Farming Systems Trial, which I've referenced a couple times already, which is a side-by-side comparison of organic production next to conventional production. And that project has been around for 40 years. So it's amazing to see, you know, 40 years worth of data that can show, you know, how those systems compare to each other, not only just for yield, but, you know, impacts to diseases, weed populations, weed pressure. And so, you know, that's really what put us on the map. But our history actually goes back 30 years further than that, about 70 years, when J.I. Rodale, our founder, launched really what is now known as Rodale Institute and started writing publications called Organic Gardening. And so it's very fun to be a part of an organization that has such a long history like that. I often will go visit farms and farmers, and they have, you know, a box of their old organic gardening magazines on their porch that they want to show me. And they want to show me where they made little notes in the sidebar where they were implementing some of these practices, you know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. So, you know, between the publishing of Organic Gardening and the Farming Systems Trial, that's really what Rodale Institute is known for. But since then, we've launched a lot of other research projects. The Vegetable Systems Trial is, again, a side-by-side comparison of organic and conventional production, but now focusing on vegetable production, which is very, very neat. And a lot of that research that we're going to be hopefully publishing shortly is about nutrient density in organic and organic produce versus conventional produce. And we also do a watershed systems trial, which, you know, I think is very, very important. It looks at the impacts of nitrates in water. And as somebody who sits here on the East Coast and sees the detrimental effects to the Chesapeake Bay, that sort of research is really going to assist in how we keep nutrients out of the bay.
Well, you used to be just in Pennsylvania. You're not just in Pennsylvania. I mean, the land. I mean, you've always been able to extend and have conversations and advice all across the country. But you actually have, what, demonstration plots and some land in different areas of the United States now.
Yeah, and that's another great part of this is that, you know, after our 40 years of the Farming Systems Trial, we found out different systems that work really well for Pennsylvania farmers, but now we're trying to figure out how do we make these systems work well for other farmers across the United States. So we have a California Organic Center, which is a regional resource center in Ventura County, California. We also have a Southeast Organic Center, which is in Georgia, and our Midwest Organic Center, which is in Iowa. And that's really allowed us to extend our outreach to these other communities that just need research to be done on how to make these systems work. And there's already so many great partners in those areas, in the Midwest, in the South, and on the West Coast. And so we're really just trying to partner with other organizations that have already, you know, done a lot of this research and provide the resources to continue growing the organic movement across the United States.
Now, Emily, let's talk about your role, because you have an opportunity to talk to these people that want to become organic and transition. How does explain that?
Yeah, so my title is Organic Crop Consultant. So I'm the program manager of the Organic Crop Consulting team at Rodale. And it is really, it's a special role, and honestly, one that doesn't really exist in many other capacities across the United States. So our program launched in 2019 when we received some funding from the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture. They actually had their first ever state farm bill in 2018, which allocated a lot of money towards Pennsylvania farmers. And one of those was to go and support on the ground, one-on-one support to transition to organic agriculture in Pennsylvania. So my counterpart, Sam, he's now the director of the program. He was hired and then I was brought on shortly after. And we serve Pennsylvania farmers, you know, across Pennsylvania to help them with developing a crop rotation plan, help them understand their soil soil fertility needs and find markets for their organic products once they are certified, and also support them during their transition years. If they need, you know, a higher premium market, where can we find that for them as well?
It's kind of interesting, as I understand your own experience, that you were involved with a certification organization. There's certifiers that when you're certified organic and one of the organizations that certify them, you have to fill out reports and you have to go through a certain process. And sometimes you get farm visits to be sure that they're conforming to the requirement for the organic law. Now you're getting on the other end of it, which is those people that say, I want to become that. You know, it's one thing to say that you're doing it, but now you're able to get back to them. And somebody could say, I want to become organic. So how does that go? I mean, do you get some phone calls? Do you get names? And do you, anymore, I'm not sure how often you get to go out there. Do you jump on a Zoom with them and have them go out and, you know, do a FaceTime in their fields or something like that? How does that work?
We do it all. We like to pride ourselves in meeting the farmer where they are. And in 2019, that meant physically. In 2020, that meant sometimes physically and sometimes as they're walking around their farm on FaceTime or in Zoom, sharing a Google Earth map that I can kind of see the outline of their farm. And so, you know, we've gotten pretty creative this past year. We were pretty concerned about the lack of one-on-one time with farmers. You know, I love farmers. I love every farmer I've ever met. They're so creative and innovative. And my favorite thing prior to even being at Rodale was to be invited to farmer meetings and drink chocolate milk and eat organic cheese with them and, you know, talk about how their season's going, what's going well, what new things they're trying out. And so my job isn't much different these days, but, you know, I get to offer alternative perspectives to them now and be able to kind of share what Rodale is doing, translate that research that we're doing and help them use that on their farm. But I will say every farmer I've met, they know their land better than any consultant is ever going to know. And every farmer, you know, is so innovative and they come up with the craziest crop rotation plans that work. And it's really amazing to be kind of a team member with those farmers as they're making these changes to their operation and adjusting as, you know, the season gets wetter or colder or warmer. And, you know, so really as far as like the logistics behind it, We meet the farmer where they are. And in general, we like to do a site visit. It's so much more fun to be able to see the farm in person and to understand, you know, what are the challenges that we're seeing and how we can potentially help them through those challenges. But otherwise, if they need help throughout the growing season, if they need help sourcing a compliant seed or compliant input, they text us when they're at the, you know, when they're at the seed dealer and show us pictures of their seed tags to make sure everything's compliant and in line with organic regulations.
You know, you had me back when you were saying having chocolate milk and cheese and hanging out at the farm, because that's some of my favorite things. Not a big chocolate milk fan, but otherwise I like all that goes with that. But the other thing, it seems to me that the maybe less fun part is that you got to maybe help them with some spreadsheets, because the conversion issue, land has to have had nothing on it or been fallow or at least not had any chemicals used on it for, what is it, 2-3 years?
3 years, 36 months. Mm-hmm.
So part of that transition is that they got to survive until they're into production, right? So they can do like a cover crop of something like a wheat or something that they're not applying anything at all to try to get to transition. But then they got to just like stay alive until they can get that next, get paid for the fallow acres or the acres that they're just not being very productive with while they're waiting for them to get up to stage. Is that right?
So it's actually, you know, and this is where we really feel like we can help on the ground with those farmers. And so, you know, just taking a farm, for example, one that is a fairly common around here is like 300 acres that's currently in maybe grain rotation, also maybe has a couple of hay fields. We don't often say, okay, take all your land, take it out of conventional production and put it in cover crop for 3 years and lose all that potential income. Depending on the amount of risk that that farmer can assume financially, we put together a plan that meets the goals of that operation. And so goals are really different across the board. Some farmers have enough financial ability to assume a little bit of risk and take maybe 50 acres out of production and cover crop it for 3 years, add compost, add manure, do soil tests to make sure that they are building soil health over those 3 years, and then put it into a grain rotation after that. Otherwise, some farmers, they want to just do it all. They want to put all 300 acres into, you know, an organic rotation. But, you know, for those 3 years, they are just able to sell their products as conventional. So they're still getting conventional prices. They may be, again, getting that dip in yield. But what we can do is help them find some markets that will accept their products at a little bit of a higher price. So what we found is that there's some markets in Pennsylvania and across the Midwest that we, you know, they're able to get $1 more for their soybeans for non-GMO and 50 cents more for their corn for non-GMO. And that helps buffer those, you know, that income during those 3 years. So, you know, rotations during those 3 years, it doesn't mean that they can't farm it, they can't touch it. But what it does mean is that they need to figure out what's most important to them. Is getting that income more important than building soil health? It's up to the farmer to decide. We won't tell them one way or the other. But if the building the soil health aspect is, then we can offer some suggestions for inputs and crop rotations. And then it'll be really ready to go for that grain harvest or, you know, even a vegetable harvest after those 3 years. But, you know, if they're putting it back into a grain rotation, there's some other things that they can start doing, like incorporating cover crops and adding more manures and compost to start building soil organic matter during those 3 years.
Are there market opportunities for them to say, this crop's not organic, but it's like halfway organic, you know, or, you know, we're on our way? Because I mean, I've seen people before that have explained the fact that they weren't organic because they were in some unique situation that there's some product that they had to use. And when they were able to explain it, you know, that someone say, well, fine, I can go along with that. I mean, is there an in-between opportunity for people to say, okay, we know we're going to be organic pretty soon, we're not quite, but they still get some marketing benefit of claiming they're on that trail?
There is, but it's complicated. And often if you're located maybe on the West Coast, QAI is a certifier that certifies, you know, larger farms and processing facilities. They offer a transitional certificate. The NOP, the National Organic Program, had previously kind of tossed around the idea of doing some sort of transitional certification program, but recently nixed that. So right now, there is not necessarily a huge market for transitional products, but if you are certified to a transitional program that may be offered through some of these certification agencies, there's particular marketing verbiage that you can use. And I'll mention one brand in particular that I often see at the grocery store, which is Kashi. So Kashi works with farmers who are transitioning to organic. They then use their organic grain once they're certified. But during the transitional years, they kind of have this story that they sell on the back of their packaging that talks about how these farmers are making that transition to organic. They're committed to those practices, but they're taking the time right now to make that transition. And nowhere on the package do you see the word organic. So it gets a little tricky because to an average consumer, transitional doesn't necessarily like make them think of organic right away. But this is something that is very interesting. And what I always encourage farmers to do is just tell their story and tell their consumer, if they're doing a direct-to-consumer market or even a retail market, just tell everybody what practices you're using and how you're making that transition to organic. And people trust those people who are honest about those practices.
Boy, I've had the same experience that any issue, once you create that communications and you tell the story and they can tell you're being honest and they think, oh, fine, okay, at least you could explain it. And that these stories are especially good stories. Well, let's just take a minute and talk about your story. How'd you get into this? I mean, this is one of those things that I can't imagine that you went to a high school guidance counselor and they said that, oh, I want to be pursuing this sort of thing someday. So where should I go to college and what should I study? I mean, it really probably wasn't on the radar screen, I would guess. So how'd you get into this?
I remember sitting in a kayak, floating down the Juniata River with my dad. I was probably 15 years old. And he just said, Emily, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I just remember being outside and hearing the birds and feeling the sunshine and just the breeze. And I was like, I want to be outside. I don't know. I need to be outside. I want to work outside. And he was like, great. That sounds awesome. You know, like what career paths can you do outside? And I was like, I don't know, environmental science, environmental engineering, maybe something like that. And so from there, we started really just exploring that environmental science route. And so when I went to Penn State, I went to Penn State for my undergrad and I joined, my major was environmental resource management. And with that, there was this option to really start digging into the agriculture side of environmental resource management and soil science. And I thought, soil, that's outside. I like playing outside. I like soil. That's kind of cool. I could see myself doing that. And I didn't necessarily see the connection to agriculture yet. And I definitely didn't see the connection to organic agriculture. But then I was asked to volunteer with this local farmer. He was about 5 miles from Penn State. And I would drive out there once or twice a week and work with him. And eventually, you know, 7 seasons later of working with him, he started letting me, you know, plant my own crops and let me play around. And I would make suggestions like, oh, I, you know, read this thing in Rodale's Organic Gardening magazine that we could control aphids through this method. And he's like, okay, sure, we'll try it out. Let's, you know, let's try that. And so I started to see this connection between soil and agriculture. But I knew that agriculture, there was, in my mind, the only way to be in agriculture was to be in conventional agriculture and the tractors and the combines and, you know, GMOs. And I didn't see this alternative path yet. And I was sent a job description for a certification specialist at Pennsylvania Certified Organic, which is an organic certification agency. And I was in my senior year and it was in State College area where I knew I wanted to stay for a little bit of time after graduation. And I just applied. And it was one of those things that the moment I started doing it, I realized that this was exactly where I was supposed to be, was within organic agriculture. And to have that feeling is really special, and to kind of feel like you're in your dream job, you know, being 21 years old is actually really incredible. And from there, I just, you know, I stayed in organic agriculture. I worked for PCO for several years, and then I worked for the Organic Materials Review Institute, and then was brought onto the Rodale team about a year ago. And, you know, Rodale was like the pinnacle, honestly. When I just started at PCO, I looked at Rodale and thought, you know, that's a place I could see myself working for a very, very long time, working with farmers in organic agriculture.
Well, you obviously are in a happy space. You're enthusiastic. You feel great about it. And if you're going to look down the road like 3 or 4 years from now, what's going to take to make it be a happy space then? What is it that you see in a few years that you're really enthusiastic and you think, you know, you can kind of see it coming and you feel good about what might evolve? What would that look like?
Getting myself a farm.
There we go. Well,
yeah. to showcase the practices that I'm talking about on my own backyard. That would be amazing.
You know, it's a great dream. If other people have dreams like that, or even just transitioning, tell them how they can get information about Rodale and specifically the program that you're involved with too on transitioning to organic operation.
Sure. So Rodale Institute offers free consulting services to farmers in Pennsylvania and the 12-state upper Midwest region as well. So that's from North Dakota, South Dakota, down to Nebraska, over to Ohio, and up to Michigan. So it's a 12-state region. So we do offer free consulting in 13 states right now. So if you're in one of those states, don't hesitate to contact us. The other thing we should mention is that we do offer free or fee for service consulting in states for a pretty low cost, very reasonable if you're interested outside of those 12 states and you're just thinking about organic transition, or you just want to chat with somebody on the team to talk about your farm. You can just email us at consulting@rodaleinstitute.org.
And again, your website is Rodale, is it .com or?
Rodaleinstitute.org, and there's more information in there. Okay.
That's good. Well, Emily Newman, it's really nice talking to you. You're living the dream, and there's a dream ahead too. So thanks for taking the time to visit with me on Farm to Table Talk.
Thanks, Roger.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.